how a few in Greek life can make a big difference.
The fact that you can move freely within so many countries here, it's fantastic.
We travel to Europe to get a student's perspective of what the EU is all about.
And the university spins its way to a new record. TERP Weekly Edition starts now.
This is TERP Weekly Edition, a look at the issues and news in and around the University of Maryland College Park. TERP Weekly Edition is produced by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio.
Hello and welcome to TERP Weekly Edition. I'm April Failing.
And I'm Ronaldo Calvello. 10% of a community can make a big difference. That's the idea behind the work of two groups based at the University Health Center. The 10-man plan and 10-women plans were created by the members of the Office of the Victim Advocate to create an open dialogue about sexual assault in the Greek community.
And sexual assault is a very real problem. National studies show that 2.8% of all college women experience rape or attempted rape every academic year. Here at Maryland, where we have 12,000 female students, that works out to an estimated 420 women. TERP Weekly Edition's Ashley Sharif and Susan Frentz looked into the new 10-man and woman program on campus to see how it will be addressing the problem. Ashley has their special report.
Last spring, Molly Monahan Kreischman, the Men's Anti-Violence Project Coordinator in the Office of the Victim Advocate, decided it was time to fill a void created by the lack of open conversation about sexual assault in the Greek community. After some research, she started the 10-man plan, which was based on a simple idea.
10% of a community can change a community.
Each week, 10 members from each participating fraternity sit down with a facilitator to discuss issues relating to sexual assault and sexual violence. There are 6 fraternities on campus that participate in the program.
The major focus is really just giving these guys a constant touchstone for addressing the culture of sexual violence that we often see in fraternities.
Monahan says the participating fraternities stepped forward on their own to take part after recognizing the need for some help.
We started having fraternity men coming into the Office of the Victim Advocate and saying, you know, I just got IM'd last night by this woman who says that she was raped in my fraternity, and I believe her, and what do I do now?
Michael Monteleone, a senior in Pi Kappa Alpha and a member of the 10-man plan, says it was a wake-up call for his fraternity. Even though the 10-man plan met some resistance in the beginning, Monteleone says the brothers in the fraternity are becoming more comfortable with it.
It's a lot easier to talk about and get support about. People don't question it nearly as much.
Some members of the 10-man plan are selected by their fraternities. Some volunteer on their own. Jonathan Pace, a junior in ATO, says he learned about more than just sexual assault.
I think the best part about it is you kind of find out a lot about yourself as a guy.
It's not just the guys who are trying to change the Greek community. A 10-woman plan kicked off this fall as a sister program to the 10-man plan. Its goal? To create a support system for women affected by sexual assault. Laura Milsetich, manager of client services at the Office of the Victim Advocate, oversees one of the 10-woman plans.
If they're noticing somebody like maybe isn't getting out of bed, or maybe somebody's been having some trouble eating, that like there might be underlying issues, like they might have been assaulted.
Milsetich says she'd like to see the program expand to include more sororities, and perhaps even include organizations outside the Greek community.
Any other like all-girl groups, like if it's like athletics or in residence halls, like maybe hallway groups or something like that. It's just, I think it's a cultural change. It's bringing girls together to talk about these issues.
Conversations about sexual assault are just beginning. Jonathan Pace of ATO says it will take time to see if the culture can change for good.
There's certainly more dialogue about it, so I'd say that is an improvement. In terms of actual behavior, I think that might take longer. It's a behavioral thing. That kind of stuff doesn't change overnight.
The programs hope to expand, but to do that, they're going to need additional facilitators. Monahan and Milsetich hope to one day open a 10-man and 10-woman plan in every fraternity and sorority. But with only 4 facilitators, that may take some time. In College Park, I'm Ashley Sharif, TERP Weekly Edition.
Now, updating you on a story that TERP Weekly Edition has been following throughout the semester. TERP Weekly Edition has learned that the university has almost completed its investigation into a suspected hazing incident at Zeta Beta Tau in September. Director of Student Conduct John Zacher says he expects to close the investigation by late this week or early next week, after one more student is interviewed. The 2-month investigation has included interviews with the victim and ZBT members and officers, as well as discussions with ZBT's national office. Zacher says sanctions could range from a warning to the removal of the organization or individual members. TERP Weekly Edition's calls to ZBT's national president were not returned.
You know, when you consider taking an extra burger with your dining hall meal next semester, remember, a security camera may be watching you. In order to combat the rise in theft at the dining halls, dining services may consider taking more active measures to stop it, including using cameras for theft. Dining Services has referred about 40 students to the Office of Student Conduct for stealing food. The Resident Hall Association has endorsed working with Dining Services in these problems, but expressed concern that using cameras is going too far.
Two girls living in Dorchester Hall found out how hurtful a word can be. Sophomore roommates Andrea Rothschild and Blythe Dillingham were left a message on their whiteboard outside their door stating that they were Nazis. The two roommates think it was potentially a drunk, but never have they had a derogatory term like this said to them. Both Andrea and Blythe think that people need to think before they do.
I think that people don't realize what they say. Not only does, like, saying we're Nazis is, like, incredibly offensive, I don't think that really there's any reason for that, even if it is a joke. And also, like, other people seeing that on our door could be offended by it as well.
The university police have filed a hate crime report. Both the students were offered counseling. This report follows a hate crime occurring earlier this semester involving a noose, which made national headlines.
In the wake of the tragedy at Virginia Tech last spring, colleges and universities throughout the country have been working on implementing special alert systems. Earlier in the semester, TERP Weekly Edition told you about the UMD Alert Emergency Text Message System. This system sends students who sign up a text message that alerts them to campus emergencies. TERP Weekly Edition's Ross Masco has an update on the program's efforts to get everyone signed up and on board.
That emergency siren that blasts through campus on the first Wednesday of every month at 11:55 a.m. is a test of the campus emergency system. For the 14,000 people who've signed up for the UMD text alert, the siren is followed by a text message reminding students about the emergency test. Campus Police Major Jay Gruber says that while 14,000 is a good number, he's looking for even more.
My goal would be to have half of our average daytime population signed up, which is about 25,000 people, so we are shy of that, unfortunately.
How are Gruber and the university hoping to make that goal?
Word of mouth we're hoping on. We're hoping at the beginning of the semester to get Resident Life involved and other groups on campus, UNIV classes, those type of platforms where we can capture people in large groups and get them to register. In these large groups that have their cell phones, we can get them to register right there from their cell phones.
Maryland is not the only school to have a text alert program. How does this program compare to programs at other schools? Major Gruber.
We're actually one of the leaders in the area. We probably have more people percentage-wise signed up on our system than most others. Some systems require their students to give a cell phone number. I'm not sure if our student body is ready to provide their cell phone numbers on an involuntary basis during the registration process.
Sophomore Lee Janowski is one student who has signed up for the text alerts.
The reason why I signed up, I was after the VTech incident. I wanted to notify if something emergency happened on campus. Also, my parents wanted me to sign up. They were worried about me, and they want to be notified as well if something happened.
While Janowski says he doesn't expect the alerts to be used very often, he says he's glad the system is in place, just in case. He also says he wouldn't mind more text messages about smaller events on campus. Major Gruber says the text messages are also a good tool to get more people to sign up.
Even these messages help get the message out. I notice a spike on the day of the test message where we may have twice the number of people who normally register on a daily basis because they see their friend getting this message and they say, how do I get that as well? So the word of mouth is pervasive from the test message.
Gruber says he thinks that as time passes and students are made aware of the program the moment they arrive at the university, it will be easier to get everyone signed up. As for the future, Gruber says alerts about school closings may also be added to the text alert program. Janowski says he'd like to see a customizable system, which would include traffic and weather updates. In College Park, I'm Ross Masco, TERP Weekly Edition.
Coming up, some green sprouted out amongst the white snow.
And I'll take you to my trip to Europe to ask students, what do the letters EU mean to you? This is TERP Weekly Edition.
This is TERP Weekly Edition. I'm Ronaldo Calvello. Snowmen, snowball fights, and icy roads. Last week, students got their first real taste of winter when close to 2 inches of snow fell on College Park. TERP Weekly Edition's Ashley Sharif spoke with a few students to see how they were coping with the white, wintry stuff.
The daily walk to class was made a little more difficult last Wednesday due to a seasonal friend, snow. Some students were both surprised and excited to see the campus transform into a winter wonderland.
I can't believe it's snowing so early in December.
I love the snow. I always love the snow.
Students like senior Ryan Derenberger were less than thrilled by the falling snowflakes.
Completely neutral.
You're not excited?
No.
Other students not happy about the wintry mix? Commuters. Students weren't looking forward to scraping off their cars and dangerous driving conditions.
I don't really mind the snow because I don't have to drive.
People aren't really taking that much caution. They're driving as if, you know, the roads aren't slippery and icy. That's the worst part.
For those who didn't have to drive, the snow was a chance to let loose. Junior Jonathan Obermeyer.
We had a snowball fight last night, but it didn't last very long.
Last week's couple inches of snow were enough to put senior Charmy Oza in a holiday mood.
I put up my Christmas tree.
Because of the snow?
Yes.
The snow didn't last long, but it did give us all a taste of what winter may have to offer when the winter solstice hits in just a little over a week. In College Park, this is Ashley Sharif, TERP Weekly Edition.
You may have noticed some green sticking out of the white on campus last Thursday. What it was a show of support for Greenout, an event run by the student group Clean Energy for UMD. The university is one of 8 schools participating in the Maryland Student Climate Coalition. The goal is to cut carbon use by clean energy and require students throughout the state to take a class about climate change and sustainability. On Thursday, Maryland students gathered on McKeldin Mall to rally for carbon neutrality and to have a good time. TERP Weekly Edition's Shira Yudkoff has the story.
In front of 20 6-foot windmills, which were symbolic of the number of windmills it would take to power the university, students showed off their green clothing.
What I'm wearing? Sure.
Green shirt, spray-painted lime green shoes,
a little green pin.
I decorated my shirt so that it says, I heart carbon-neutral universities.
Green scarf.
I have green undies and green in my heart.
Johanna Caliber, Vice President of Clean Energy for University of Maryland, says the university has already begun to make serious efforts to be more environmentally friendly.
So there's 11 schools in the University of Maryland system. 3 of them have committed to carbon neutrality. Our school is committed under the President's climate commitment within the next 2 years to reduce our carbon emissions and by 100%, so we're not going to be emitting greenhouse gases.
Student Government President Andrew Friedson lists more changes the university has made.
I'm thrilled that the University of Maryland has become a national leader on environmental sustainability. This campus continues to tackle the issue on many levels. We have a biodiesel bus system that utilizes kitchen oil to fuel many of our shuttles. Our president has signed the president's climate commitment. Our vice president for student affairs has been nominated for the Environmental Volvo for Life Award.
The Green Out, Johanna Caliber explains, is an opportunity for students to recognize what the university and other schools have done to improve the state of our environment.
So today the Green Out is our day of action. It's just to make our movement transparent, show everyone that this is a statewide effort.
Volunteers ask students to sign a petition.
Raise your hand if you've signed the petition so far.
Supporting a carbon neutral policy. Representatives from every school involved in the Maryland Student Climate Coalition will meet with the Board of Regents in February to present the signatures. For TERP Weekly Edition, this is Shira Yudkoff in College Park.
Feeling the pinch from having to fill her up? According to AAA, the Auto Club, a gallon of regular gasoline in the state of Maryland is costing drivers $3 a gallon this holiday season. Commuters to campus are certainly feeling the crunch, but the university is too. It costs more to keep the bus fleet up and running. TERP Weekly Edition's April Failing and I set out to see how commuters and the administration on campus are dealing with those rising costs.
I was here 6 years ago, and then I used to buy gas for $1.10, $1.20, and just big change when I came back.
Sometimes I try and, you know, carpool my dad because he works in Greenbelt.
I'm probably spending a couple more dollars than I was.
Sherry, a graduate student, starts her car to head home from class. And as the gas pedal goes down, the more cash she's handing over at the pump. One way she tries to save is by trying to predict the next drop in prices.
I usually fill up whenever I need to, and so I need to fill up again. Sometimes I may only fill up halfway in hopes that the gas price will go down by the time I need gas again. So I guess that's the difference. Instead of filling up, sometimes I go half.
For some commuters like Sherry, the drive is only a few miles. For others, like senior Amy Vinn, who drives in from Baltimore, switching to public transportation can save as much as $30 a week.
I kind of split
taking the MARC train from Baltimore to College Park and driving. But since I'm an art student, I have big canvases, so I have to drive sometimes. So it's kind of half and half. But since the gas prices went up, I started taking the train because it's just a lot cheaper. And they give you student discounts.
Mandatory fees in Maryland's tuition package help cover costs for the commuter bus system on campus. Director of Transportation Services David Allen says they keep a surplus in case there's a big spike in fuel prices, but he says calculating the student fees is tricky business.
Well, it's a difficult thing to do, to budget for fuel, because for mandatory fees, you do those budgets about 18 months in advance, and nobody can tell us what fuel will be like 18 months from when we work those budgets.
And after they make their best estimate for fuel prices, how do they know they'll have enough money?
Try to give ourselves a buffer and just really hope. There's no state or federal agency that can help us.
The transportation department isn't the only office trying to keep costs down. The fuel for keeping campus buildings heated is also a big expense. Doug Duncan, Vice President of Administrative Affairs, says the university has found ways to save big on those costs.
We have locked in prices for electricity. We've locked in prices for most of our natural gas uses on campus. So we've sort of been fortunate that way of having long-term 2-3 year contracts to keep the power going here on campus and to keep buildings heated.
The gas crunch means other price hikes too, from higher food prices to rising delivery costs. Duncan says if costs skyrocket too high, the mandatory fees may go up next school year. How does Doug Duncan cope with prices at the pump? He drives a hybrid.
The SGA has decided to cap the amount of money that a student can raise when running for office in the Student Government Association. There was a cap until 2004, when the SGA voted to remove it. Now it's back, because SGA President Andrew Friedson says it's the right and fair thing to do.
I had this distinct advantage that I grew up in a wealthy area. I have a lot of wealthy family friends. You level the playing field when you say, listen, everybody starts with this amount. And in a sense, I think it's a good indication of what kind of president they're going to be.
Friedson raised over $5,000 on his way to winning his election. The cap on fundraising is $3,500. But former SGA officials, including former SGA President Andrew Rose, say it's a violation of free speech. 2007 is the 50th anniversary of the founding of the European Union. In those 50 years, the EU has grown from 6 states to 27 members across the continent. And the EU is about more than just the euro. It's become a global powerhouse for trade, human rights, health and safety, and environmental protection. But how much do Americans know about the EU? How much do Europeans know? I went to Brussels recently to find out. Ah, Brussels. Cobblestone streets, sidewalk musicians, and another very popular item.
You know that the Belgian chocolate is famous, famous for several reasons.
Brussels is home to many of the institutions of the European Union, a community of almost 500 million people. Many important decisions are made in the gleaming buildings that tower over Brussels' quaint streets, from lowering carbon emissions to limiting pesticides in foods. Alice from the UK says the EU has been the driving force behind rights many British take for granted.
The European Union does a lot of good in terms of extending paternity and maternity leave, which I don't think our government would do on its own. Most people don't know that lots of our employment law have actually been passed by the European Union.
But getting 27 countries to agree on anything isn't easy. And with at least 10 other European countries still hoping to join, it may only get harder. Any European can tell you that the EU bureaucracy can get a bit bogged down.
There is a sense of that it's meddling in the wrong things.
I think they do a lot of just like paperwork and so on. They just discuss about things which just don't have any importance, like which alcohol can have which name or just nonsense.
Kasper Soyden is the senior press officer for the European Commission in Washington. He says the EU is working hard to show Europeans how it affects their lives, from lower cell phone bills to cheaper plane tickets.
That's a tangible benefit that's being brought to the consumer. They made us think the European Union as being a place in Brussels or bureaucrats sitting around doing absolutely nothing. But the European Union actually has a lot to do with the day-to-day life of people all over Europe.
Most Americans don't know much about the European Union either. But the University of Maryland is working to change that. The university's study abroad office offers programs in more than 15 EU member countries. Law and government major Meredith Shee will be studying in France next semester. She's heard the stereotypes about the EU, but thinks it's an innovative concept, too.
I think it's very slow-moving, but I think it's a great idea, bringing regions together on a more tight-knit level.
Junior Douglas Jackson-Cusack recently spent a semester studying climate change and terrorism in Austria. He says the EU does a better job than the United States of putting people before business.
Their open-mindedness is what's probably the driving force in them having such, you know, firm stance on the environment and the human rights. So I think if the U.S. could just be a little bit more open-minded, that definitely could get us on track with the EU.
And when Maryland students do cross the Atlantic, they better pinch their pennies. Last month, the dollar hit a record low against the EU's single currency, the euro.
Coming up, hear that sound? Multiply that by 600, and you've got a record.
And ESPN will be covering the Terps in a bowl, but one of their own is coming back to school. This is Terp Weekly Edition. This is Terp Weekly Edition. I'm April Thaling. Another title for the University of Maryland. And this one puts the campus in the Guinness Book of World Records. For what, you may ask? Well, last week, 602 students simultaneously spun dreidels. Dreidels, of course, are the tops that come out during the celebration of Hanukkah, which began last week. In order to set the record and earn a place in the Guinness Book of World Records, the university had to have more than 541 participants spinning for 10 consecutive seconds. Other schools, like the University of Michigan, tried to top Maryland but fell short. Dreidels have four sides, with Hebrew letters that stand for "A Great Miracle Happened There." They're used for a holiday game played during the 8 nights of Hanukkah.
The university didn't just get a record. They got a gift of about, say, $10 million. It's yet another big boost last week to the university's $1 billion fundraising campaign. The latest beneficiary? The athletic department. And the donor? The man whose name is on the football team house, alum Barry Gossett.
My support for the university and my support for the folks in this room is just because it's the right thing to do. I have done the easy part now. I've written the check. Now it's up to them to take care of the rest of it.
$8 million is being earmarked for intercollegiate athletics. The other $2 million will go to scholarships, which already carry Gossett's name.
You know, many of us are just going to stay home for winter break. The football team will spend it in sunny San Francisco, facing the Beavers of Oregon State in the Emerald Bowl. Head coach Ralph Friedgen is thrilled.
I asked the team after the NC State game, I said, you know, do you have a place you want to go? And they all said San Francisco. So they knew that minutes walking off the field.
The team finished with only 6 wins, but with key victories against Rutgers and Boston College, they will be facing an 8-4 Pac-10 team who thought they deserved a better bowl. Bowl time has been good for Friedgen, who has finished 3-1 in the bowls he's coached the Terps.
While some students graduating at the end of the semester may be thinking this, they may be thinking this. That's because Maryland alum and ESPN reporter Tim Kirchen is being called up to be the winter commencement speaker for the campus on December 19th at the Comcast Center. Kirchen, a former Diamondbacks staffer, graduated from the university in 1978. He's reported for the Baltimore Sun, Sports Illustrated, and the Dallas Morning News. Kirchen's focus these days is on Major League Baseball and appears regularly on ESPN's Baseball Tonight and SportsCenter. Kirchen, who lives near the university, says he's spoken at high school graduations before, but his address to graduating seniors at his alma mater will be his first college appearance.
This is nerve-wracking stuff, believe it or not. I mean, it's one thing to talk on television about what Derek Jeter's hitting with runners in scoring position. It's a whole different thing when you're supposed to be advising college-age kids what they're supposed to do with the rest of their lives.
He's the third sports commentator to be featured at commencement. The previous two were also alums, including former starting quarterback Boomer Esiason and basketball player Len Elmore.
I mean, let's face it, Boomer was a great college quarterback and a great NFL quarterback, and Len Elmore was one of the greatest college players I've ever seen. I'm just a dinky little sports writer.
Selection of the commencement speaker is now determined by a student committee.
The online course evaluation system is up and running after a slow start, and the Wednesday deadline is fast approaching. The system received 10,000 responses in a single day last week, but there's a long way to go if students want to see the results. That's because the system will only display results for classes that get a 70% response rate. Course Evaluations Coordinator Renee Baird-Snyder says that's to prevent a few people from painting an unrepresentative picture of a course. And it's students alone, she says, that make the system useful.
Because if students don't participate now and they don't see the results to help them pick courses in the spring, then they may decide it's not worth participating in later.
The SGA requested an extension last week to Wednesday's deadline. But after consulting with faculty and the advisory group, the university decided the evaluations must be received before any grades start coming in.
Some of them start getting posted as early as the first final, and it wouldn't really be a fair circumstance to have a student go in, see their online grade, and then go and complete the evaluation after that.
And there's one more incentive to get your evaluations in. One randomly selected undergraduate and graduate student will each receive an iPod, courtesy of the SGA and the graduate student government. They're called Scan and Leavers. You probably know them, may even be one of them. They're the students who show up at the student entrance at Comcast Center, get their ticket scanned, and leave. They're looking to boost their loyalty points to make it easier to get tickets to games where they're hard to come by. The Diamondback reports the athletic department is working to keep those students around for the games, and they're doing it by way of a new marketing campaign aimed at appealing to the students' loyalty and pride. Some 4,000 tickets are made available to students for each game. The athletic department says about 1,000 of them scan and leave during those early non-conference games.
A clash at the College Park City Council over the state's plan for the Purple Line. The university's vice president of administrative affairs, Doug Duncan, argued last week with Maryland transportation authorities over the MTA's proposal to run Metro's Purple Line along Campus Drive. Duncan said the MTA plan would completely disrupt the university's master plan, which calls for pedestrian-friendly thoroughfares. Duncan told the council and MTA officials that putting trains through the center of campus is counter to the university's principle of pedestrians first. Coming up, a new policy could give the phrase Good Samaritan a whole new meaning. And if an iPhone is on your holiday wish list, hang in there. You could get one with Testudo on it. This is Terp Weekly Edition. This is Terp Weekly Edition. I'm Ronaldo Calvello. When you hear this music, what do you think of? Most likely the iPhone, one of the hottest gadgets around. Now the university is considering a deal with Apple for students to buy an iPhone at a discounted price. This deal is still very much a work in progress, but if it happens, it would be similar to the deal Apple made with Duke University, who gave away iPods to students to take notes. The iPhone could be connected to the university's Wi-Fi, according to some sources. SGA President Andrew Friedson is a member of the IT Council, who heard about this proposal.
Think long term. You could video for lectures. Putting something like that on a handheld device would be, you know, pretty cool. And also for safety reasons, you can get the alerts. All these can automatically be signed up to the alert, as opposed to having to manually sign them in.
OIT is looking into the possibility of adding university programs to the iPhone.
Having a party around here can be pretty hectic. Who to invite, what drinks to buy, how to keep the place from turning into a big mess. But few think of how loud your party is until you get a noise violation. Terp Weekly Edition's Brian Bryson reports on how students think the noise violation codes are just too harsh.
The noise ordinance officer's white car is met with great fear by party hosts as it patrols College Park streets after dark. Senior Toby Hershkowitz recently received a $500 citation.
I assumed he was taking a noise reading, so I went out to talk to him, and I explained to him that we weren't looking for trouble, that I told everyone to go inside, and I asked if we were in any danger of getting a noise violation. He said no.
The next morning, Hershkowitz had a violation taped to his door. Director of Public Services, Bob Ryan, maintains that the ordinance is a necessary evil.
Again, the whole purpose of the ordinance is quality of life, so that people can sleep at night, and enjoy their property, their homes.
However, Hershkowitz was angry because he thought he had taken the necessary precautions.
The party was under control and wasn't noisy, and he even told me that.
So how loud is 55 decibels? The answer is not very. This is the meter noise officers use, and right now it's reading about 70 decibels. On any given night, this house would be in violation of College Park's noise code.
The
the city says they aren't out to get anyone.
You know, we try to be fair, and we're seeking compliance. We're not seeking to punish people.
Hershkowitz isn't so sure.
I think they exploit the use of the noise violations to their advantage when they need to.
While it may be debatable if they're targeting students, the noise police will continue to hold College Park parties in check, whether students like it or not. In College Park, I'm Brian Bryson, Terp Weekly Edition.
Juniors and seniors living on campus will find out this week how much housing is available from Resident Life, but the RHA and the SGA have been giving mixed messages. The RHA voted to not allow juniors to be pulled into university courtyards and South Campus Commons. The SGA voted that rising juniors deserve that opportunity, but Associate Director of Resident Life Steve Pekus says something has to give.
There's limited capacity to house all the people that want it. Somebody has to lose. The university has said least harm in university's eyes is to put older students out of the halls so more younger students can live in them.
This is the latest effort from Resident Life to deal with the housing shortage on campus.
Most of us have had nights where we've partied a little too hard. But what if a friend goes too far, and calling 911 means getting in trouble? TERP Weekly Edition's Eric Schaefer gives us an in-depth report on a proposed policy that can change all that.
The party life is a way of life for students around here. But sometimes people can go a little too far. That's the problem Megan Daly dealt with last New Year's Eve. She held a party in her commons apartment, and as the night wore on, she noticed someone on the floor.
I went to the bathroom at some point in the night, I think it was about like 1:30, and found her basically unconscious on the floor. She was babbling, her eyes were rolling back in her head. Talked to my roommate and decided that we should call an ambulance because she was pretty sick.
When the police came, Megan and her roommate got a bombshell. The girl was just 17 years old. Police didn't press charges, but the university gave Megan almost a year probation because she and her guests were underage.
I felt like I was being responsible and calling an ambulance for her, and now I'm getting punished for it.
Now Stacia Costner is trying to change all that. She's proposed in the university senate what is being called a Good Samaritan policy. It would exempt university students from any citations when they are helping someone in need. But this policy would not only include alcohol, but drugs as well.
You know, the first thing that comes to a person's mind when they see a friend who is possibly dying to the point where you have to call 911, the first thought should not be the penalties or the trouble that they're going to be in.
I believe that a lot of what is being entertained here are hypotheticals.
Associate Director of Resident Life, Steve Pekus.
The hypotheticals are compelling, but are they realistic? That's a question that I'd have people who are deliberating on this really consider.
Pekus says the sanctions for drinking in a residence hall are not harsh. But if you get caught with drugs, a student is facing a year suspension from housing, which, given the current housing shortage, means you've lost it for good. President Dan Moats says it may be useful to have such a policy for alcohol because drinking in residence halls is a serious problem.
I think it's an important issue to have better opportunities for our students to look after each other. Transports for alcohol, for example, are mostly from our residence halls. We have about one a week. It's not a rare circumstance.
One of the things that would turn my head is if there was incontrovertible evidence that a significant number of students in the community would be hesitant to summon help for fear of getting in trouble.
Well, consider Cornell University in upstate New York. Their policy put in place 5 years ago exempted the person who got sick, the caller, and the host of the party. Since then, the number of EMT calls from students has gone up 150%. Deborah Lewis, coordinator of alcohol projects at Cornell University, says that's a good thing.
People aren't necessarily drinking more. They're not necessarily getting more intoxicated. It's really a matter of people knowing what to do in these situations.
And her study shows that a major reason for not calling an ambulance before the policy was implemented was the caller didn't want the victim to get in trouble. There are still a lot of questions to sort out about this policy, including who will be exempted and whether drugs will actually be included. But Megan knows from experience not having that policy can make people think twice before they help someone who parties too hard.
Drinking's going to occur no matter what, whether this policy is in place or not. So let's just make steps to make sure students are safe.
In College Park, I'm Eric Schaefer, TERP Weekly Edition.
For years now, there's been a push to kick the habit. And for the most part, it's worked. Cigarette smoking is down overall in the U.S. But recent studies show smoking remains high among young smokers. And one of the reasons being given is an old form of tobacco use that's becoming increasingly popular among college students. It's called hookah. It involves smoking through a water pipe, often in groups at special cafes. Last week, TERP Weekly Edition's Becca Newell began a special report taking a look at the hookah habit. This week, in part two, Becca tells us that while users may think hookah is harmless, the health experts say not so.
We all know smoking cigarettes is bad, but what about hookah? With its wide variety of flavors, many students don't believe the negative consequences associated with this substance. Sophomore Tara Fuller.
I think it's just fun, and like it seems like it's not as bad as cigarettes, so they think that, oh, it's just cool, like it's not like a cigarette, it's better.
Claire Mullins from the American Lung Association in Maryland says hookah was recently labeled as the biggest tobacco trend of the 21st century.
It's something very different. I think this generation does understand the whole idea of cigarettes being bad for your health. And I think that there's a misunderstanding about the dangers of hookah.
Even though students know tobacco is harmful, they don't regard hookah with the same caution they do cigarettes. Junior and hookah owner Ben Silsby.
If you're smoking a pack of cigarettes, you're going to carry them around with you all day. You're going to take 10-minute cigarette breaks from your job, and you're simply not going to do that with a hookah. So it's probably as dangerous, but since it's less habit-forming, I wouldn't be as worried about it.
The American Lung Association disagrees.
The dangers from hookah stem from the fact that you tend to do it for longer. When people take a cigarette break, they smoke for 5 or 10 minutes. However, with hookah, it can last for many hours, so you're inhaling smoke for a much longer period of time than you would if you were simply to step outside for a cigarette break.
With the rising popularity of hookah among students, the university's substance abuse program has become more active in informing students about the dangers of hookah. Program coordinator Kendra Smoke.
It's pretty much, you know, here are some of the myths and here are the facts. Because people don't think of hookah as having nicotine, they don't think of it as being something that could possibly be addictive or addicting, and it is.
Most students, however, don't seem concerned.
No, I probably won't stop smoking hookah. I guess I really don't see a reason to.
I'm not going to stop smoking hookah because I enjoy it and I only do it like once a month.
I would like to say that I would stop, but I probably won't.
I think I've smoked it often enough that if it were going to make a difference, it probably would, so I'm not too worried.
According to one report, some 200 to 300 hookah bars have opened in the U.S. since 2000, many close to college campuses. Hookah may go back some 3,500 years, but it remains a contemporary issue that refuses to go up in smoke. Becca Newell, reporting for TERP Weekly Edition, College Park.
So, what do you think of when you hear a symphony orchestra? Beethoven? Mozart? A little Bach, perhaps? Well, hold on to your baton. There's a new group in town, and this one sings the tunes of your favorite video games. I recently caught the Gaming Symphony Orchestra, who brought their passion for video game music to Memorial Chapel.
Yep, you got it. Tetris is the name of the game, and the Gamer Symphony Orchestra was ready to play it classical style, as well as other well-known video game tunes for a crowd of 200. GSO is just a couple of years old, but conductor and singer Renard Sexton is excited about the orchestra's future.
Now we're working on incorporating Outside the University as our own arts group, building an endowment fund, and starting to incorporate more outside players. It already makes up about a third of our membership, but that's the part that's growing the fastest.
Sexton conducted the last piece, one that many cheered loudly.
The Encore, Medal of Honor. It's very fun. It's an enjoyable piece. You know, it's powerful, it's quick, it involves the entire group, and it's just a fun piece.
Chris Cooper, an alumni at Maryland, came to the concert. He found out by word of mouth.
I heard about it. I was helping out at summer orientations here this past year, and a friend of mine told me about it.
What was his favorite piece of the night?
Probably Final Fantasy VII was my favorite piece. And we all know Tetris. We all know Tetris.
Harkt Nunigar, another alumnus, played the clarinet in the GSO when it first started and has seen a couple neat changes.
The first thing I noticed when I came in was like, wow, they actually have a drum set this time, and they have a choir? That's kind of neat.
Greg Cox, a GSO conductor, says his interest in the group has given him an opportunity to learn a lot in music and conducting. Tonight, he enjoyed a certain piece.
I have to say Halo, definitely Halo. The egotistical answer would of course be my piece, but Halo is definitely up there on the energy level, and it's really fun to play, really fun to conduct. Everyone enjoys it.
Ethan Che, a viola player in the orchestra and nicknamed E.T., decided to join after he came to a concert 2 years ago.
And I learned about this just by going to one of the concerts like this and just listening to it. I mean, I play the violas, decided to play, and we've been playing ever since. Well, we've been here for 2 years, and it's getting larger, as you can see, and it's getting really fun.
The orchestra is made up of students from all different majors and backgrounds. Its goal is to expand and welcomes anybody who might want to play an instrument. Practices are from 7 to 9 on Thursday nights at the Armory.
We figured we'd end our last show of the semester with a holiday wish from the university. The school sent out a special video greeting last week, comprised of faculty and famous alums, including journalist Connie Chung, basketball coach Gary Williams, and football coach Ralph Friedgen. Here's a clip of the greeting as many students and faculty greet Testudo on their way to our annual holiday greeting photo shoot.
Great practice, fellas, but we have to go.
Oh my God, I gotta go, I'm so sorry.
Ralph, come on, let's go, we gotta hurry, let's go.
If you'd like to see the whole greeting, visit our website at www.twe.umd.edu.
That's all for this week's Terp Weekly Edition. I'm Ronaldo Calvello.
And I'm April Failing. We wish you all the best of luck on your finals and a happy holiday season. Remember, you can hear all of our shows online and on your iPod. Just go to www.twe.umd.edu. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the spring.
This has been Terp Weekly Edition, produced and written by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio. We'll be taking off for the university break, but please join us again after classes resume for another look at the issues and news in and around the University of Maryland College Park.